do you have copies of your band?
Oh gosh, well, I know it's somewhere. We do have an album on Spotify that we did over the pandemic that we did just like virtually.
Uh huh. What's the name of your band?
King Radon and the Noble Gases.
Wow.
That's great. You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Charlie Bennett in the virtual studio with everybody, Wendy Hagenmeyer, Fred Rasko, and Marley Givens. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called Meet the Archivist and the Fred.
The Fred. I'm not prepared to meet anybody today. What does that title mean?
Oh, all will be revealed in good time.
Ugh. Our guest today is the new digital accessioning archivist at Georgia Tech, Dylan Henry. We'll hear about his work, how he got into archiving, and yes, a bit about the Fred.
The Fred. Okay. Well, I'm just going to stay on script and not worry about it yet. Our songs today are about old media formats that break, messes that come with dealing with digital technology, and nightmares faced by digital archivists.
That sounds scary. I know it's October, but it's too early for Halloween yet.
Well, never fear. Dylan will talk us through all of it optimistically, so I'm enthusiastic about that. Yeah. In fact, Dylan is a musician and a fan of pop punk genre. So let's start with a favorite track of his that he mentioned that will get the enthusiasm going in all of us. By request, this is Linoleum by NoFX right here on Lost in the Stacks.
You just heard Linoleum by NoFX, and this is Lost in the Stacks. Our show today is called Meet the Archivist and the Fred. Our guest is Dylan Henry, the newest faculty member of the archives team at Georgia Tech.
So Dylan, what's your actual job title here at Georgia Tech?
My title is Digital Accessioning Archivist.
I feel like that's treading on Wendy's territory a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. So accessioning is basically the legal transfer of materials from, you know, one person or institution to another. So basically when someone donates something to us, you know, we need to get it in writing and all that. So that's just what that term means. But where the digital part comes in is that we could be getting things on, you know, floppy disks or zip disks or CDs and other removable legacy media like that. Libraries have been around for thousands of years, and RIP Library of Alexandria. and we've had a long time to get used to preserving, you know, physical paper materials and bound materials, things like that. Digital technology, not so much. You know, you can pick up a book from, you know, the 1600s and you can open it up and, you know, see what's in there and get an idea for it. But if someone hands you a boatload of floppy disks, it's a lot harder to know what exactly you're getting. So the whole process of kind of appraisal of deciding, hey, what sorts of things do we want to take, or, you know, what do we think does or doesn't fit the you know, the institution's mission, it's a lot harder to do that when you know, you can't just tell what something is just by, you know, looking at it.
So it sounds like you're talking about the digital equivalent of just lifting the lid off the box and discovering that someone has packed a whole desk into
precisely
the cardboard
box. That it's really easy to say, okay, this we want, this we don't want. But yeah, not the same when, you know, there's that kind of that barrier of having to find a way to just basically to open the cover of the book and look inside.
Yeah. Are people giving you only digital collections on physical media? Or is this like, we talked to Alex McGee a few shows ago. So if she gets the collection from someone's office, are you all going to kind of divvy up the work and pull out the things that are in your area?
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of hybrid collections where people will donate physical and digital items. And so that's where the role gets a little bit tricky because, you know, there isn't just one single curator. There's, you know, different people wearing different hats. It's like some person has their main responsibility and they're also a curator in this area. So I'll need to have these kind of lines of communication open to, because it could be any of a number of different people who are going to be bringing in this digital material. So it isn't just one person. It's a bunch of people with curatorial responsibilities.
Speaking of divided responsibilities, you know, at the very start of this interview, Charlie said something to the effect of, hey, it sounds like your job title, digital accessioning archivist, you're stepping on Wendy's toes a little bit. Wendy couldn't be at this recording, but she hired you. So she's divvying up some stuff to you, right?
Yes. Yeah, precisely. Because she is wearing many different hats. And so part of this position starting out is I'm working closely with her and I'm reporting to her, obviously. So we are meeting regularly and kind of developing, you know, the responsibilities and the goals and stuff as we go along. So we're kind of sort of building up the position's specific role as we go. There's, you know, some kind of general directions and things, but then we'll just have to see once I start, you know, looking at the old workflows and looking at the new technology that we have now. I'll have to talk about that, the computer that we have. But, you know, once I actually get down to it, then, you know, it'll be looking at the internal documentation that we have and making changes there and, you know, revising workflows and all that sort of stuff.
So what is your, I want to get back a little bit to the, like, what do you do when someone hands you a bunch of magnetic media, right? What's your ideal situation and what's your nightmare situation? If you tried to imagine those two accessioning kind of moments.
Ideal situation is everything is very well labeled, perhaps even with some sort of spreadsheet of listing each individual item and what sorts of things are on there. That would be ideal. And nightmare is just stuff strewn everywhere, different formats, no labeling, not even in like a banker's box or something. So who knows what condition it's been in. Something with like, it's not unheard of for there to be like pests or things like that in boxes of materials. So like mold or things like that.
I thought the digital archivists were supposed to get away from that, you know, the mouse droppings and mold and cigarette butts.
It's probably less likely. You know, you think about pages and like moisture and things like that, less likely. But if something has just been sitting on a shelf collecting dust for, you know, a decade or more, who knows what's going to be in there.
But your ideal situation also sounds like the ideal situation for a box of paper archives, you know, that, you know, you want it to come in kind of organized and labeled and you know what might be in there. I guess it's easier to deal with a box of paper that doesn't have those things than it is a box of floppies, but.
Yeah, it is similar. And then it gets back to the, paper, I can open it and look at it. And so it would kind of be an extra step of utility for digital materials to have stuff kind of listed out or, you know, like file directories or things like that, you know, especially if you get like a large, like, so you get like a terabyte hard drive or something like that. Like, who knows how many thousands of files could be on there.
We'll be back with more from Dylan after a music set.
File this set under HV8079.C65.
You just heard Survival Song by the delightfully named Andrew Jackson Jihad. Before that, Architects Sleep by The Evens. And we started with Don't Turn Me On Just to Turn On Me by The Mint Chicks. What a wonderful set. Those were songs about nightmare scenarios of valuable material not being accessible, not being operable, or even surviving.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and our guest today is Dylan Henry, who recently joined the archives team at Georgia Tech as the digital accessioning archivist.
Yeah, let's meet the Fred.
I'm right here, Charlie.
So I see that you're still moving into your office.
Yes.
I kind of imagine that you would have, as the digital accessioning archivist, you'd have all the kinds of computers and interfaces, you know, the retro tech lab sort of waiting for you to put all these different things into. I mean, is that where you're going to do this work, bring in all the magnetic media and then start trying to find the thing that can read it in the retro tech lab?
So I have, I don't have, you know, a bunch of different, like I don't have like an Apple II or something like that, but I have a bunch of different removable drives for 5 1/4 inch floppies, 3 1/2 inch floppies, you know, zip disks, that sort of thing. But we have the computer that we have, the workstation, it's called the Fred.
and it's me.
He does all the work, and
I was a technology acquisition.
That's the secret.
I'm a cyborg.
You know, the FRED, it stands for Forensic Recovery of Evidence Device, because I believe it was originally used for, you know, police, like detective sort of work. And it's this machine that has a bunch of different kind of hookups to it. It has this little like fan that pulls out. So if you like plug in an external drive, it'll like keep it cool. And it has a bunch of software on there for a bunch of different purposes, for, you know, making copies of a disk or for extracting the files or, you know, looking at information about the files. Even finding, you know, things that may have been deleted, but they're still technically on, you know, a disk somewhere, that sort of thing. So it has all these different tools, copying and, you know, packaging and preserving all sorts of, different types of data files.
I want to picture it. Is it like something that you have to put in a corner? Is it something that you fit on a desk? Is it, can you hold it in your hand? What is it?
It is currently under my desk. It is tall and very heavy, 6 bays that can, you know, you can swap out, like put different hard drives in there. A little digital interface thing, and it can be used for like write blocking, which is, so sometimes if you put a disk into a computer, the computer will just, you know, access or alter data. For instance, there was a time when I was trying to copy a CDRW, rewritable CD, and I put it into the drive and the computer formatted it, which is to say that it erased all the data that was on there. Mm-hmm. So with a write blocker, you can prevent that sort of thing from happening. So that's something that's a very important feature, because when you want to recover data, it's a lot harder to do that when you have erased the data. And it could even be sometimes the, you know, the computer, it might just like modify, be like, hey, I've accessed this, you know, disk on this day and this time or something. And then you've altered, you know, the data that's on there. So
which direction did you come into this? How did you get into this job?
I studied music composition. I got a bachelor's degree, a master's degree. And then I went out to do a doctorate thinking that I would become, you know, a professor or something like that. But when I was doing my master's, I also got really into musicology, which is like music history. So when I went to do my doctorate in composition, I also took on a master's in musicology. When we had to take research in bibliography and then advanced research in bibliography, part of the advanced research in bibliography was we had to, you know, do assignments going into the archives and special collections. I already had a master's degree and I had never been to a special collections. Even at that point, I still just assumed that libraries, it was just, okay, there's a bunch of books and like some CDs and stuff. And we first visited and there was just kind of this curated display for us of all these different unique materials. And I was just completely blown away. I was like, wait, libraries have these things? Like there was a flyer for a Black Flag concert nearby back in the 80s. And I was like, wait, they kept this? Like, this is something that they keep? What? That's so cool. Like, I couldn't believe it. And I just asked if they were hiring anybody, and they were. So I started working part-time in the archives as a student assistant. And luckily they needed people who could read music, because some of the collections that we got were from musicians. So wound up working really well. And so I started, working at the reference desk and doing some processing, and I would just kind of like feel around, go back and just see all kinds of the cool stuff that was there. From then I wound up taking a short position as, metadata specialist. So just doing metadata entry for photographs. And then I was on a contract position, doing something kind of similar to this, where I was at an institution where we had a big backlog of old legacy media that were just sitting there collecting dust. So I had to find ways to access it, move it to the server, and all that kind of stuff, just the whole digital preservation, life cycle. From there, I applied to a bunch of different jobs, including music librarian positions, to kind of, do both worlds, as well as, because I was doing this digital work, digital kind of library stuff. And this is how the chips fell. And I'm really happy to be here.
Can you give a definition of legacy media? You mentioned that you had all this legacy media. Can you kind of explain that a little bit more?
Yes, that's media that is pretty much just unsupported at this point. So yeah, your different types of floppy disks, your jazz disks, the mini CDs or whatever. So stuff that's just no longer supported. And I feel like soon that's probably going to be CDs and DVDs as well. I mean, my laptop doesn't have a CD drive. I don't really see many of them now being sold with them. So, but yeah, just media that's kind of lived past its prime and is no longer often used.
And from your description of your educational background, it sounds like you are a feral archivist. Do you have an archival degree? Do you have an archivist?
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I didn't finish the stories. Also, when I was, I finished all my coursework. I was ABD. I just needed to complete my dissertation, and I was incredibly burned out. So I took, kind of 2 years off from working on that, staying enrolled for, one credit a semester, so I was, drop out or flunk. And I completed an online library science degree. And then I just finally, in April, defended my dissertation. So I did actually complete the doctorate. So,
holy cow.
Yeah, a lot of degrees.
Was it about the Black Flag flyer?
No, although my musicology master's thesis, I did write about punk music and politics. And one of my chapters was just about zines. And I used the extensive zine collection that we had at the institution where I was. We had a whole bunch of, punk zines from late 80s, early 90s, from US, Canada, Mexico, and even some European zines as well. So,
how does it feel to have the coursework off your back?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I'm 34 now, so I was in school for, how many years. It feels very surreal to like not have to, on the weekend to not be like, oh, I have to turn this paper in. Like, oh, sorry, I can't go out. I gotta study for the exam. Like, it's a very big relief.
You're listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with more from Dylan Henry, digital accessioning archivist at Georgia Tech, on the left side of the hour.
Hello, good people. You are Lost in the Stacks with Ian MacKay here on WREK in Atlanta.
Our show today is called Meet the Archivist and the Fred. As Dylan mentioned, he wrote his master's thesis on punk music, and I thought we should hear more about that right now.
So I wrote my master's thesis in musicology on punk music and politics because I got my start into music in the first place playing guitar and drums in pop punk bands and stuff in high school. And so for me, it was a chance to kind of do a deep dive on the music that I really grew up with. Even more so because I grew up, you know, listening to a lot of 90s bands and stuff, and so I wasn't as familiar with some of the early music, and so it gave me a chance to explore, you know, like Dead Kennedys and stuff like that, who I knew a few songs or hadn't really, you know, listened to. You know, as with any genre, there's no just kind of like one size fits all, like one answer to, you can't just say, oh, you know, punk music espouses politics in like this sort of way. More than anything, I just got a big overview of just this kind of, this not just like a genre, but also just kind of like a zeitgeist, you know, just seeing the ways that angst and stuff manifests itself in different ways, and not just in different parts of the country, and not just in, you know, the US and the UK, but even all around the world, even in, you know, Indonesia and like South America, I was, you know, finding sources. So it was just a really fun deep dive into, yeah, not just the style of music, but just kind of a general attitude way of life.
File this set under Z701.3.C65C67.
You just heard TV Party by Black Flag, and before that, On Tape by the Poustics. Songs about appreciating old media formats and being distressed when they break.
Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks. Our show today is called Meet the Archivist and the Fred, featuring an interview with Dylan Henry, the newest faculty member of the archives team at Georgia Tech.
Do you already have a sense of where you're going to be either getting or looking for those digital collections from legacy media on campus?
We do have a bit of a backlog that's documented in a spreadsheet. I imagine that's going to be where things start out. But then again, because since I'm not going to be curating myself, so I'm not sure. I'm interested to see, you know, who's going to come forward and be like, oh, hey, I have this and this and this, and different people with different types of stuff. And that's, I mean, I love learning new stuff and seeing stuff that I wouldn't otherwise find. And this is a great way to do that. And it'll be funny too, to see some of the stuff that, you know, might not necessarily be in the scope of what we want to collect. I was preserving stuff on discs from a repertory theater company, posters and like promotional materials. And then I get to a floppy disk that has someone's like fajita recipe in a Word document. It's like, well, maybe this, you know, might not exactly be worth preserving.
So unless it's a really good fajita recipe.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to try and do some like outreach and help people avoid legacy media to give to archives? Like, are you going to try and make your job sort of irrelevant? Or,
well, I guess to get paid. So you bring up something that's interesting, and there's something that I think people don't think about, especially as we see kind of transition to more like cloud storage and things like that, is that it actually can have an environmental impact. Even digital files are still physical. They're still, you know, these ones and zeros, and they're still sitting on, you know, server farms somewhere, and that takes energy to run. You know, from a preservation standpoint, you know, there's different levels of preservation. You can just copy a disk image. But then what about, you know, the files that are on there? Do you want to extract the files? Well, then you've doubled the amount of data if you have the original CD and then you have all the extracted files. Now, when you're, you know, preserving stuff for a library, you're also going to create like metadata, data about the data, kind of keep track of it all. And also when you're preserving things, ideally you want to have it stored in three different locations, just in case, you know, something happens, you know, some sort of like fire or something like that. So you always have, or something becomes corrupted. So you always have backups. Well, if you copy the disk image and also extract the data from it, and you have it on three different servers, then you've sextupled the, you know, the amount of like energy you're using and the storage that's required. So that's something that I think just I never thought about until I started doing this work and thinking about, well, if we're being responsible digital stewards, you know, then you think about how many terabytes of data that we have. Then you think about how all these other hundreds, thousands of institutions are doing the same thing. That's a lot. And so thinking about, well, how does that, you know, affect, you know, the climate and things like that, when you just have all this energy being devoted to, you know, cloud storage. So that's kind of the downside of, you know, obviously you want to copy stuff from your old disks, because, you know, I wonder how many floppy disks are corrupt at this point, but it's like, it's kind of like there's, you know, no real win, because there's always some impact to the decision. And so that's kind of something that, we saw, you know, with like Bitcoin mining and stuff like that, and all the energy that was using, where it's like, oh, this is using more than the entire country of Denmark. So that there's kind of that practical, you know, concern as well when considering storing digital data.
What's the user experience going to be like? How are people going to come in and either come in physically or come in virtually and use these things?
That is a very good question. And that's part of something that I'll be working on and collaborating with, is thinking about how to make it, you know, user-friendly for people to donate things to us, whether that's through an online transfer or through physical donations. So, you know, I'll be working with some other people kind of responsible for taking in different stuff, you know, physical stuff, and you know, finding a solution that kind of works for all of us, and that will be hopefully easy for the user, because that helps us. You know, if it's too difficult for them, then they, you know, maybe they won't, you know, donate some stuff, and then we'll miss out on something really cool.
I know that you, like, literally you just started working just like a couple of weeks ago. I hope that this hasn't felt like an extension of your job interview.
No, absolutely not. I think that this kind of work is important, especially because we're going to see a lot more digital donations. So if I can just get the word out for, you know, just some of the considerations that I think people don't typically think about, you know, it's, I don't know, just letting people know stuff that they might otherwise not know. So I appreciate just the opportunity to kind of get up on my little soapbox for a minute. So I appreciate it. It does not feel like the job interview.
We've been speaking with Dylan Henry, the Digital Accessioning Archivist at the Georgia Tech Library.
File this set under QA76.9.D33Z57.
You just heard Digital by Joy Division, and before that, Computer by Lungfish. Those were songs about the messes we don't necessarily expect from digital technology.
Our show today was called Meet the Archivist.
And the Fred.
Not to be confused with this Fred right here, me. We talked to Dylan Henry, the Digital Accessioning Archivist at Georgia Tech, about legacy media. And so I wonder if anyone on the show team has any seriously legacy media in their possession right now.
Well, it's not yet in my possession, but before he passed away, my father put a bunch of Family Tree stuff into Family Tree Maker software, which I think is probably on floppies at my mom's house. It might be on CD, or it might just, I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm sure the file format is also obsolete at this point. And at some point I'll get my hands on that. What about you, Wendy?
Well, if you get your hands on it, Marley, we'll figure out how to how to read it.
RetroTech for life.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is an iPod from like, 2004, maybe, like, you know, back when there was like the wheel that you like clicked or spun. Yeah. I don't know how it worked. Yeah. So there's probably some MP3s on there. And like, do I still have them? Do I still want them? I don't know. But at this point, it's a really awesome artifact. Fred, it's your question, but what's your answer here?
So my first thought was to think about some old cassette tapes that I have, because I have no means to play them, but I still have them. But I also thought about digital technology that I have, mini disc. I don't know if you guys remember what mini disc is. The little
I remember
miniature CDs. They're like about 2 inches square. I had a mini disc player, and I had about 50 of those. And some of them had recordings of various music projects that I played on. And true story, this past weekend, I was digging in the closet and I found all these old mini discs, and I spent an hour and a half just like listening to old stuff. Truly happened just this past weekend.
Love it.
Charlie, can you finish the segment out?
I sure can. In 1999, I did a large scale art project that involved tons of photos, and I scanned them all for long-term archival purposes and put them all on zip disk like an idiot. So I have these zip disks, and if I ever use them, it'll just be me seeing if they click or not. And they probably will. So before the click of death ends it all, let's roll the credits.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, and it's written and produced by Charlie Bennett, Fred Rasko, Marley Givens, and Wendy Hagenmeyer.
Today's show was edited and assembled by Charlie using a mixture of legacy media and cutting-edge digital technology.
It's true.
Legal counsel and a pristine 7-inch of Holiday in Cambodia by Dead Kennedys were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Dylan for being on the show, to all the tech archivists for all that they do.
You're welcome.
Woo-hoo!
And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening. What can we do without the digital archivists?
You can find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast pretty much anywhere you get your audio fix.
Next week's show is a rerun, and we'll be back with a new show the week after that.
Time for our last song today. And our last song has to be from Dylan's band, which has an amazing name that you heard earlier in the show, King Radon and the Noble Gases. I want to say that again. King Radon and the Noble Gases. What a name. If there's a better band name derived from the periodic table, I'd like to hear about it. So let's close with a song about what Dylan does in his job, trying to make something designed to be temporary last forever. This is Blood Forever by, yes, King Radon and the Noble Gases. Have a great weekend, everybody. King Radon and the Noble Gases.